Sick of procurement bottlenecks, endless back and forth, and last-minute surprises? Get the cure with Bill Procurement. Bill is the all-in-one platform trusted by nearly 500,000 businesses to simplify and automate their financial operations. And now they've introduced Bill Procurement, which pairs seamlessly with accounts payable to automate procure-to-pay workflows in one place. Every step, from submitting a purchase request to reconciling payment, happens in Bill Procurement. You'll know whether spend is approved before you buy, and Bill's AI-powered automation helps reduce errors so you can make purchasing decisions with confidence. Plus, Bill Procurement puts everything you need to match and pay invoices right at your fingertips. So dump your clunky procurement process and keep your business moving and growing with Bill Procurement. Purchase, pay, and on with your day. Right now, score $200 when you see Bill Procurement in action with a demo. Just go to bill.com/procurement200. Don't wait. That's bill.com/procurement200.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
The whole Murdaugh legacy, obviously, it's gone on for many, many, many generations. There are still many prominent Murdaughs there. It just happened to be that Alec is the one that went down, but it went on for many, many years. So what exactly are we looking at here with Alec Murdaugh when we talk about this this appeal process? Should there be an appeal granted for Alec Murdaugh? Before we get into the weeds on the clerk of court, what do you think, Stacey, as of this point?
Well, I would like to also point out with that Hulu movie that's coming out, what in the hell do we do about the pronunciation of this damn family?
It's Murdaugh.
They were saying like Murdaugh.
Yeah, and Alec does too. Alec hits the K in there, Murdaugh. Alec Murdaugh.
Like a G, isn't it? Like Murdaugh?
Murdaugh. Murdaugh.
Murdaugh.
Murdaugh. Murdaugh.
And I've Alec, heard Murdaugh.
I'm Alec Murdaugh. I think it's a G. I think you're right. But it's Alec, even though it's spelled Alex.
The whole thing just, I get stuck. Forget the whole thing that happened. Like, how do you pronounce this? And that's the broadcaster in me. Like, I always, you know, if you hand me copy, I'm like, how do I pronounce this? What's this name? And if I hear it four different ways.
So you're saying if you'd have been a juror, you would have gotten hung up on the name and never.
100%. You'd be like, okay, on a jury.
We've just seen all this evidence. Stacey, what do you think? I'm about the name. Like, what is the, like, what about like the murder? What? I didn't pay attention to any of that. I've just been trying to figure out the name here this whole time.
I'm not kidding. I am not the only one who has thought this. I guarantee it. Somebody was listening to that preview that we just did, and they're like, wait, I thought it was this.
Me. I just thought maybe I'll keep my mouth shut because I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
No, well, I really don't care if I sounds like I don't care what I'm or know what I'm talking about, because that's driving me nuts. I have not been able to think this entire segment because how the fuck is this name pronounced?
Murdaugh. Murdaugh. Alec Murdaugh. There we go. Do we got that? Alec Murdaugh.
I don't think I can say that.
I'm going to go with the G. And it's all spelled differently.
Okay. So I'm sorry. What was your question? Your Honor?
The question goes down to, do you think that there should be a retrial on
this? Yes, I do. Because I think he is guilty as sin. But in this country, we do have due process. And I think he was denied due process because of Becky Hill. Mm-hmm. I think we need to do this over again and do it the right way. He will again be guilty because the evidence doesn't change. But the process by which we do it needs to be done appropriately, because if it's not, we're setting a very dangerous precedent. And it's our rules are the way we do life in this country. It matters. Mm-hmm. We have rules for a reason. We have speed limits for a reason. If you just decide, well, you can go 75 in a 25 and nobody prosecutes you, well, then the next person can do it.
Well, and this is a case that's not so much about the evidence of the case. It's about the procedure of the case.
Correct.
And that's what I think a lot of people get hung up on. Well, he's guilty of sin. Well, is he? Because somebody was messing with the jurors.
But the evidence doesn't change, and the evidence really points to him, doesn't it?
That can be argued too. If it was tried alone, without all of the financial charges, it's a much weaker case. The financial charges certainly made him look evil, which he probably is, or really an insane narcissist that has zero empathy for others, which if you go, well, if you have zero empathy, stealing hundreds of thousands of dollars from a disabled family whose mother died as your maid, and maybe disabled is incorrect, so I apologize, I don't mean that, but you have a family over there that certainly needed the money, that were reliant on who was the housekeeper for the Murdaughs, who died on their property, tripping down the stairs, and then Alec takes the money and never gives it to them, hundreds of thousands of dollars. You have that. You have all these other cases that he tried and won, and then he always set up these bizarre ways of getting the money, and it went to him and never to the people. So there's all sorts of evil that's going on there financially. Is that evil? Is it greed? Is it both? Yes. Does that make someone a murderer? No.
No.
And that
makes you a shitty person.
But does it make them capable of murder if they have such callous and lack of care for someone over here that they're able to basically just rob them of what would keep them alive or get them out of a really bad situation, or they're just deserving of it because of the trauma that they've gone through and it's their money to have? Does that then show that, well, if you're that callous and capable of doing that, are you that callous and capable of killing your own wife and blowing your son's head off? Literally. That's a lot.
It is a lot. It's a lot to absorb. And I think at the end of the day, and this is just my impression, I think he's guilty. I think he, like I said, the evidence doesn't change, and a lot of it points to him.
I think he knows. I think he could have done it.
Yes.
I think he's connected. Did he pull the trigger? That's the question. It's a weird setup. I mean, could he have? Yeah. I mean, but again, we are supposedly a society of laws and a society that bases, you know, evidence, that bases, you know, conclusions on evidence. And there's some questions there. I'm in no way like saying Alec Murdaugh is innocent, but you know, when you have the clerk of court lying under oath to a judge when asked if she allowed reporters to see sealed exhibits during the trial, when she goes to the jurors and tells them her own opinion, essentially, and cautions them on their ways of thinking based on her way of thinking during the actual trial itself. You got issues. And that's interfering in the, I mean, it would be, look, I mean, everybody likes sports analogies. I don't ever really make them, but if you had a ref in a game that was really throwing it, you'd be like, and you're on the opposing team, like, no, we need another game. And your team may have played wonderfully and lovely and should have totally won that game. They had some great plays that had nothing to do with the ref's calls.
Right.
But the ref did make some very seriously shitty calls based on their own allegiance to a specific team. And they wanted to write a book about it, too, which she did during the actual trial.
Which I don't understand how that was.
You're going to go back and say, that game shouldn't count, no matter how good one team played. Because, yeah, I mean, had that call not made, that could have influenced this. It could have influenced that further down the line, because everything will affect what happens after it. So it's very difficult, and I would say logically impossible, to say that Becky Hill's actions did not influence the jurors, even especially when you have a juror that's saying it did. So it's not for Gene Toll, the judge, to say, well, that's not, what you're saying isn't true. It didn't affect you. Well, then why are you even asking the juror what the hell? If that's what you're going to say no matter what, then why the hell are you even asking the question?
Yeah.
Why are yeah.
The other thing that I'm curious about, and I live in a small, or, well, I'm going to say a small-ish town, not necessarily as small as their town, but small town justice, is it different than large city justice? And is that okay? You know, was this just something that seemed normal and okay for her because that's how they always do things there?
Is
Who
it
knows
okay?
How many other trials
is it okay with? Or is it how it works?
And that's another question that's important to ask. You know, I'm picturing Mayberry. So for those of you who might know that reference, is this just a small town where everybody knows Floyd the Barber, you know?
Well, I don't think, I get exactly what you're saying. And I would say, you know, sometimes people think smaller towns are more dangerous for justice than like a larger city. And I would combat that with saying, look at Ellen Greenberg, Philadelphia.
Yeah, good point.
Corruption is corruption. You can have it anywhere.
Yeah.
I'd say it's a little easier to have in a smaller setting because there's fewer checks and balances. But you can certainly have it in a major city too. If there's corruption, there's corruption. If the right pieces are in the right spots on the pegboard to get where you want to go, you can get there.
Yeah.
If they're not, they're not. That's why we have checks and balances. So it's not just so easy to set things up the way you want to set them up. And unfortunately we have, you know, people in this country that, you know, they'll play the long game and they'll put those pieces in place. So then when the action that no one saw coming happens, well, guess what? They can get away with it now because all the pieces that they've put into specific places that we all thought, well, that would stop this from ever happening, or this would stop that from ever happening. All those pieces got put into place. Well, you're all looking the other way.
Yeah.
And now they can carry out their shit, and they already know how this game is going to go. They already rewrote the rules. And now, oh, well, this is how it is. What do you mean? We're following the rules. This is how the system works. And yeah, kind of is.
I think the thing about a small town, though, and I just want to throw this out there, is that because everybody kind of knows everybody's business, everybody's a little afraid for other people to know their business.
Mm-hmm.
So they keep stuff under wraps as best they can. But if they find something out, a lot of times they keep that under wraps, too, because, listen, I don't want to know about what's going on over here because I don't want them to know about what I've got going on over here.
Sure.
And I think small towns are scarier than bigger towns, only because there's so much that goes on behind the scenes that we don't even realize.
I'd agree. I would agree. I mean, and if you want to know what's going on, go talk to the butcher at the local Piggly Wiggly.
They know everything.
They'll tell you everything. They know everything. No, but then you'll get, and rumors are more rampant sometimes in small towns too. I mean, there's so many pieces at play. But yeah, I would agree. There's a lot of small towns, and I was actually just watching a video this morning. I got in a rabbit hole when I was working on the show because I like abandoned stuff. So one of that came up was abandoned Kansas towns, and I've driven through many of them. And it's weird because it's like, oh, well, this place had like 3,000, 4,000 people in the 50s, 60s, and now there's like 20 people left, and yet the infrastructure, like the buildings are there, and it's all falling apart, and the infrastructure is gone. I'd feel a lot more paranoid trying to walk around one of those towns taking pictures, because I've always wanted to do that. I'd feel like I would get shot there more readily than I would in sometimes an inner city. Why are you here? Why are you, what are you doing? What are you doing in this town? Where, you know, you ain't from these parts, are you? So there's that that secrecy, that fear. I mean, everything comes down to just being fear-based, but that's the, it's an interesting thing to think about between the sizes of city, but I don't know that at the end of the day, has a lot to do with just corruption and whether small town, large city, medium city, whatever, it's the tolerance of the town to accept the corruption and live with it versus push against it. And unfortunately, the reality is a lot of people will just go with it if it doesn't affect them directly.
Yep. But that's in life in general. That's the way we are. Yep.
And that, unfortunately, just it plays out in ways like this. That's how you get communities like this.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi there, my name is Annie Elise, aka your true crime BFF and host of the podcast Serialously. I have been a true crime enthusiast forever, but I wished somebody would break down the cases for me like a friend, giving all the details and discussing every twist and turn. So I decided to create a podcast that does just that. Serialously with Annie Elise is topping the charts with over 1 million weekly downloads. I do the deep dives in these cases so you don't have to, diving into all the raw details, saying what we're all thinking, and in a conversational way, just like having a conversation with your best friend. So join me and let's talk all things true crime. Serialously with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.